you have to work really hard in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, people don't see it.
You're lifting this heavy thing off the ground, like, oh, like it's really hard to get it like up and moving.
People think it's so easy. No. Like, oh, you just film some videos, and I think you makes a lot of money from that. Like, you know?
No, no, no.
All right, today we have on the podcast Steve Antonioni, formerly known as
Cash College,
I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
You are all about finance, money, index funds, saving, being smart with your money. But I would also say that you are a filmmaker.
I mean, I don't know if I'd call myself that, but I mean, if it's coming from you, hey, I'll take it.
When I first saw your channel, I think you were like, were you like 5,000 subscribers, maybe something like that?
Or I think even less.
Even less, okay.
I think I was like at 1,000 because I was like just in the process of like getting monetized, basically.
Okay.
I think when we first connected.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was like around 1,000.
I think the first videos, I think I was looking up like index funds or something like that.
Because I was just starting
to like get into investing and trying to figure out what the heck is going on. What should I do with my money?
Yeah.
And I think one of your videos popped up. And what drew me to your videos was actually like the production quality, the cinematography. I was like, oh, this is a filmmaker guy who also knows some stuff about money.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And then I reached out to you, and then I found out that you're actually a finance guy that knows some stuff about cameras.
Yeah, I remember when we met, you thought it was like the other way around, where I was like, I had like a filmmaking background and then I was making like finance videos, but no, it was like the other way around, where it was
actual
like
opposite.
I had a finance background, but just
kind of... What was the job that you were working back?
So I was basically, I had basically started training to be like a financial advisor because I thought that's what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to help people manage their money.
Mm-hmm.
But then through that, I kind of learned that I wasn't like a huge fan of the business model of the industry, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So then I kind of transitioned into more like corporate finance, like working for a big company in their finance department, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like my work experience in like the traditional world of finance. But in addition to that, the entire time I was also learning about this like financial independence movement kind of on the side, and then deciding that, hey, I think I want to try and do that with my life too. And then, with like the filmmaking stuff, I was just making like travel videos when I went on like a trip somewhere, and I'd like post it on Facebook or something, Instagram or whatever. And people would be like, these are pretty cool. And I never like thought anything of it. I never thought I was like actually that good of making videos or anything like that. But yeah, just ended up combining the two, and that's what happened.
It works.
Yeah.
What made you? So now you have what, 80,000 subscribers?
Yeah, I think I'm at like 79 something. I'm like just under 80. It's
okay.
Like,
so if you're listening, go and subscribe. Get them over that little hump to 80.
I'd love to push over 80. I've been like sitting there for a little while. I'm like, come on. Just tick 80.
I love it when in the earlier stages of your channel, like you pay attention a lot more to like.
And
I think you celebrate them more. Also, I kind of miss that. Like getting that first 100,000 was absolutely incredible. Holy crap, like that's a lot of people, and this is now like a legit thing. But then, like, you know, once I got to a million, it's like I appreciate every single subscriber, but now it's, you know, it's not as fresh anymore. It's not as, you know, it's not the romantic honeymoon stage of my YouTube channel. It's different now.
Yeah. I even kind of felt that like in a smaller scale. I think it's that like initial kind of takeoff where like the first time I think you experience the algorithm really like showing your videos to people, you feel like it's like Christmas morning or something.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, all these people.
I can't believe people are watching
stuff,
my videos.
It's crazy. And I think after that, it's almost like it's downhill from there. No matter how like high your subscribers go, it'll never be like as crazy as that first moment. But
part of also, I think, is that when you start doing something like YouTube, you're very naive. You don't realize it, but you actually have no idea about anything.
No, yeah.
You're just making videos, and you're not smart enough to realize like about this thing and this little nuanced thing. And then later on, you you start knowing how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
And it kind of ruins it for you also. Because like, I could have, that video could have done better. Oh, that, like, and when you're starting, you're just like, wow, people are watching my, and you're not paying attention. Are you getting, you know, 10% more or less views, you know, on that video? You're just like, whatever.
You don't even, in the beginning, you don't even have like enough. Like, I remember I didn't have enough. I wanted to look up my analytics so bad in the beginning, but you don't have enough data. It just tells you you don't have enough data to even see it. It's basically just like, sorry, you're still like too small. Like, nothing's happening. But I was like, I want to see what like 10 people are like thinking about my videos.
You're such a data guy too, that like you want to make like a spreadsheet and like analyze.
Yeah, exactly.
But. So what made you decide then to go into YouTube? Like, you could have, I mean, even if you didn't like your job, you could have done a lot of other things. What made you decide like YouTube was the way to go?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, well, so originally I had this idea to basically, like when I realized the financial advisor thing wasn't the right fit for me, I still wanted to help people understand money, because through me learning it and then talking about it with someone, like I'd say something to somebody in conversation and they would be like, I don't understand this, or like, I never, or they'd be like, wow, I never knew that. That's amazing. So I basically just kind of like figured out that society's completely let us down when it comes to money, and I wanted to change that. So I had this idea to basically start a website originally,
right,
where I'd put
the old school way.
Yeah, the old school way. I hadn't thought about like using social media or YouTube or anything yet. But then I realized pretty quickly that like, how are people gonna like find my website? Like, why? Who's just gonna come across my website?
I have a beautiful website, but nobody seed it.
Yeah, it's like, am I gonna have to run like ads? Like, and I didn't want to do that.
Yeah. That puts you right away on like a back foot. Like, it's like,
yeah, you're like spending money to like,
what is this snake oil dude trying to sell me?
Yeah, that
some
too. Yeah,
Ponzi scheme or something. You know?
Yeah, like when have you ever seen like an ad for just like a website? That's not even like a pro. It's like a weird thing, right? So, but I knew I wanted to have videos on the website for sure. So I was kind of watching like YouTube videos just to learn more about, like, I, you know, watch a bunch of your videos and stuff just to learn more about like filmmaking in general. But then I think at some point I got like recommended somebody on YouTube, might have been like Graham Stephan or one of those kind of people who are kind of pioneering like the finance movement, I think, on YouTube. And then saw that like they were just making videos on YouTube teaching people about finance, and they had like a career doing it.
They didn't have a website.
Yeah, they didn't have a website. So it like clicked for me that like, oh my God, I think this is just the way to do it. Like, I don't need a website. I'll just make the videos, put them on YouTube. And then the beautiful thing about YouTube is that it basically does the advertising for you in the sense that like through the algorithm, it shows your videos to people it thinks will like them. So yeah, then I was just like, oh my God, this is it.
This is the way.
I'm going to like throw myself into it. And at the start, I think I made like a dozen videos that will never see like the light of day. Like, you guys listening, you will never see them. I will never release them because I hate them so much.
They're in the archives.
Yeah, they're in the archives. They were bad, bad, bad. But then I made
you have to bring them out for your 1 mil video.
Yeah, maybe
that's
then,
when you bring
maybe
them out.
Then.
Like, whatever X amount of years ago I started YouTube, I didn't even post these videos.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
That's true. I think, that could be like a nice treat for people. Oh my God. But yeah, that was how I decided to do it. And then I just like threw myself into it while I was still working a full-time job, which was a lot for sure.
That's hard.
Yeah.
And you were posting like, how many videos a week while you were working?
I was posting one a week. Because I think at the start, like I wanted to try and bring something new to the table. So I wanted like I wanted to have like the filmmaking aspect of the videos to make them a bit more interesting. So I was like spending a ton of time, I think, focusing on like the quality over quantity in the beginning to like I think differentiate what I was doing from other people.
Right.
So yeah, I was probably working like at least like 60 hours a week. Like, did not have a social life. Like, my girlfriend was like always so annoyed with me because a lot of the time I'd ask her to help me like film stuff because it's very hard to film yourself all the time. Like, the tripod is great, but it's better to have like, you know, motion and whatever. So I definitely need to like, definitely like pay her back for that at some point. help her out in some way with like her business she's starting now too. But like, man, yeah, that was crazy early days getting it off the ground.
But you probably, I'm going to take a wild guess here that you enjoyed making them so much that it almost didn't even feel like work. And that's why you were working 60 hours a week, but it probably didn't feel like that. You were just like, oh, I like making these videos.
So. I loved it so much. Like I worked out in, so I was living in Toronto, like downtown, and I was working out in Mississauga. So for everyone listening, that's like, it took me about an hour each day to get like to and from work. So like a 2 hour round trip. And I'd get up like really early in the morning, basically take a bus and a train, or a couple different buses and train, because the commuting was kind of crappy. And I would just sit with my laptop and would just like write scripts, because I was so excited to wake up every morning and like basically get to work on stuff like as much as I could outside of my normal work hours. So I'd like write my scripts on the train. I would like, you know, do all that type of stuff. My laptop I had at the time sucked for editing. So I tried a couple of times to like edit on the go, but it was like a 2011 or 2012 MacBook Pro. So like handling the footage from cameras today was not great. But I mean, I worked with what I had and like made it work for the beginning. And yeah, but it didn't feel like work, like you said.
I think that's like the, without you realizing it, that's what I would always suggest for somebody who's starting a YouTube channel, is to make it about something that they're really knowledgeable of or skillful at, and then something that they're really passionate about and actually love to the point where they would do it just in there, even if nobody was watching it. It's just fun for them. Mm-hmm. And like, that's when you know that that's like, you should never start a channel based around a thing that you're like, I think this can make money, or I think this might be the best way to grow my channel. It cannot, it has to be something that you are really good at and that you love, like that you're really passionate about. Otherwise it's not going
to
work out.
No, because in the beginning, like you have to, you're going to have to make sacrifices. So you have like so many, I think, and like, you have to work really hard in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, people don't see it.
You're lifting this heavy thing off the ground. Like, oh, like it's really hard to get it like up and moving.
People think it's so easy. No. Like, oh, you just film some videos, and I think you make a lot of money from that. Like, you know?
No. It's very hard. But if you love it, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. And that's a good point too, I think, about having the right reasons to start a channel. I think is really important too, because as somebody who's like really involved in the financial world, and you know, like my channel's about money and stuff like that, like obviously you can make money doing stuff on YouTube, but like making that the goal, I think would definitely ruin it. If that's like your sole goal was to make money off of it. Like, I think it's very important to have other motivations and other reasons, especially like passion and stuff like that too, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think very few channels, if any, survive based on somebody wanting to get rich or famous.
Yeah, yeah.
It just, there's so much work involved, especially in the beginning, that it just doesn't like.
Because what happens
out
when things aren't going your way, right?
Exactly.
You're like, I'm not rich, I'm not famous,
and
things
it doesn't go
happening
anybody's way in the beginning, right?
No.
You're
it
posting
doesn't
videos and you're making $0 and zero people are seeing it.
You're working for nothing. You're working for free for a very long time and very hard. Yeah. Hard work for nothing at the beginning.
And that motivation can be like all sorts of things. For example, some people, like a Logan Paul, he always talks about he wants to be the greatest entertainer on planet. And so like that's his motivation. He wants to be in. For you, it was like educating people about money. For me, it was I wanted to help people with their filmmaking skills. Like that was the main reason that I started my channel. I'm like, oh, people keep asking me all these things, and like I think I can probably help some people out, make the channel around that, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, if it's money and fame, it falls apart so quickly.
Yeah.
At what point did you go full time on YouTube?
I went full time on July 5th, 2020.
I remember the day.
Yeah. The interesting thing was like, so that was kind of like pretty fresh into the whole COVID thing, like, I was only making like $5 a day from like AdSense and stuff. But so like there was nothing I would say that was from like a rational or reasonable perspective, being like, you can quit now and everything will be fine. Yeah. It wasn't quite there yet. I probably quit before that. It was more of like a feeling thing. And I think that's one of the things I've kind of learned throughout this entire process is like, it's very good to listen to both like the rational voice inside your head, but also like listen to your gut quite a bit. Cause I think it can lead you in the right direction a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. I basically just had this like feeling that now's the right time. Like if you convert these 40 hours per week that you're working at your job into putting it into YouTube, like things are going well, but they could go great if you do this. So yeah, I basically just gave my 2 weeks notice. Sorry, my boss, if you're listening, that there probably wasn't enough time. I probably could have gave you more time, but I was just so excited to get into YouTube. So that was July. And then by August, the algorithm and things just went in the right direction.
So by August, were you by August making a full-time income?
Yeah. So like, I think like September was my first big month where like I made like a couple $1,000s from AdSense and like enough to cover my expenses. Where I was like, that was shocking.
Yeah.
That was really shocking to go from like $5 a day to much more than that. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. Yeah. This like magic internet money is just like falling from the sky. It kind of feels like, which is crazy. And then after that, like, as I'm sure you know, it's like a big ebb and flow thing of like fluctuations. Like it's definitely not something that's as stable as a traditional career in terms of like numbers. Like it's kind of like, I guess, like, I don't know if feast or famine is the right word. Cause like fingers crossed, knock on wood, like I haven't had a famine, but like sometimes it is like, you know, feasting for sure. And then kind of like, you know,
I think year by year though, if you look at it, as long as you aren't like choosing to slow things down, it continues to increase.
Yeah, if it's easy to get caught up, I think, in like the month to month things doing something like this. But if you stretch out those trends and look at longer time frames, you see the impact of what you're doing for sure.
How many subscribers did you have when you were making a full-time income?
I would say, I think probably like 30K, I would say, is probably when I was making a full-time income. And I think that's a bit weird, right? Like, I think that is not super normal.
Why do you say that?
Well, I don't know. Because I think, like, the idea is for somebody to, like, have, like, a full-time career doing something like YouTube. You generally, I think the conception, anyway, maybe I'm wrong, is that you need more subscribers than that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think people assume that you need, like, a million subscribers like that to make it full-time.
Yeah.
That's why I asked, because I think it's really interesting that if you're smart with the finance, the business side of things, you can actually make a full-time income with much less than you think.
Yeah.
I always give this example, and maybe it's a little bit too like clean. Maybe there's other factors, but when I started doing YouTube, I had made a course the year before, a few months before, on wedding filmmaking. And when I was researching courses, I found this one guy who had 5,000 subscribers on YouTube, and he had two courses on how to sketch, like literally how to sketch, like the most random thing ever. And he was making around $50,000 a year from his YouTube channel and those two courses.
It's like 10x is like subscribers.
And 5, so like 000. With 5,000 subscribers, sure, I'm like the platform, I'm sure helped, but like still with that combination of things, he was smart with business, like he was able to make a full-time income. And that's really interesting to me.
That's super interesting. And I think that highlights something that's like really, really important about deciding if you want to start a channel is like, is there actually, like, are you doing something that's valuable? Like, is there a need out there for what you're trying to do? Obviously, this guy was able to tap into some people who really wanted to learn whatever he was teaching. So I think that's the key. Figuring out, are you actually solving somebody's problem out there or something like that? That's super important.
It's like any business, right?
Yeah.
Any business has to have, there has to be a problem, and your business has to provide a solution for that problem, whether it's a service or a product or whatever. And it's the exact same thing with a YouTube channel. It has to, you know, there has to be bored kids out there who you're entertaining, or there has to be gamers that are really into Fortnite that want to learn more about Fortnite and you teach them how to play Fortnite. You know, like there has to be a problem, a want, and some, you're going to fix that for them. You're going to help them.
Yeah. And then I think like a proper balance too between like what you want to create, making sure that like your voice gets through, your differentiating factors get through, but also knowing who you're making these videos for and understanding those people and what they're looking for, what they want to learn, what they, you know, what they find funny, whatever it is. I think like balancing those two things together is super, super important. Because if you just do one or just do the other, I think it's, you know, if you just focus on exactly what these people want, that can work.
Yeah.
I think that can totally work.
Yeah.
But maybe you
longevity-wise.
Yeah. And maybe you don't have as much of that like sticking factor because they don't connect enough with like, they want to know maybe a bit more of like who you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Like reveal a little bit more of yourself.
Yeah.
But if you just do too much of yourself, then it's like, well, then you're just relying on hoping that I guess there's enough people out there who just like you for, I don't know.
And also I think a lot of people make the mistake, like let's say you're an expert in finance and you teach only like super high level finance stuff.
Yeah.
Like there's so few people that are up here.
Yeah, that's
and
a good
point. So your audience is right. It's like a pyramid. The audience up there is very small, like your potential audience.
Mm-hmm.
But as you go lower and lower and you just start talking about basic finance stuff, there's millions, billions of people that you could potentially reach, right? And a lot of people make that mistake. They feel like, oh, I'm a professional. Like, I'm going to teach professional things.
Yeah.
It's like an ego thing, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to look stupid in front of my other professional friends teaching these basic things. I'm going to teach the pro stuff, you know? And meanwhile, that's the dumbest thing you could do, you know?
Yeah, no. And I think that's definitely a pressure like a lot of people feel. Like I've felt that a lot too. Like I think I've made the mistake a lot of the times in my videos where like I'll say one thing and then I'll anticipate what people will say to that thing. So then I'll reply to them in advance of them saying that thing.
Aha, got you.
Yeah. And like that's one thing I've just had to like, you know, let go of and be like I'm addressing these people who are like just entering this world and they just want to understand it better. Like this expert guy who's like 1 out of 100 or whatever, like he already knows it. Yeah. So, you know what, like doesn't matter as
and
much.
It's actually good to have like things that spark up conversation,
too,
spark up ideas, spark up a little bit of emotion. If you watch a video and they're just like no emotion, just bored, well, you're probably not going to watch another video.
Yeah.
Like, but if there's even a slightly negative emotion or like kind of like, I don't know, like you're probably going to watch the next video and like, what's he saying this time? You know, like, or you're going to comment, you know, like,
oh, it's even, this guy again.
Like those, even the worst trolls, they're adding to your algorithm essentially. And so like, who cares? Like you don't need to answer every little thing. Okay. I think this is going to be a juicy thing. So there's a few things I think that differentiate you. And one of the things is finance CPMs. So if you don't know, like get paid based on a CPM, which is how much you get paid per 1,000 views. And finance channels, the reputation is that the CPM is quite high. I think we should do a quick comparison.
Yeah, that would be funny.
Do you remember your CPM off?
I haven't checked it in a while.
Let's check our CPMs.
Okay.
So my CPMs are, I would say, higher than the average channel, but they're not, I don't think they're finance channel levels. So,
let's see here.
Where do we find it here? Hold on. Oh man, I should know this better. Okay. Wait, we'll go by playback based CPM. Okay. So for me, for the last, I think this is.
What time period are you
I think
doing?
This is 28 days.
Okay.
But it's the actual number, right?
Yeah.
So my CPM, Wait, are you in Canadian dollars?
I'm in Canadian dollars.
Okay, we're Canadian dollars.
Yeah.
Okay, so if, to convert this to US dollars,
multiply
if you want to
by 10.
Yeah, yeah. One Canadian dollar
it's
is
like 1.3-ish, I think.
Yeah, right sorry, now. One US dollar is 1.3 Canadian dollars.
Yeah.
So my CPM is 19.8.
Okay, so mine's not like not much higher
oh, really?
Than yours right now. Yeah, it's 21.62. But I think there's a couple factors that okay. influence all this too, right? It's like, I think demographics is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, like if you, I think if you have like a higher American-based audience than me,
100%.
I think that influences things too. And another thing, though, that I've been noticing lately, though, is that I think because I think a lot of people are scared of like the economy right now and like the recession and stuff like that. So I think I've noticed like advertising or like CPMs going down.
Going
a
down.
Little bit.
Interesting.
Yeah. Not a crazy amount, but yeah. I think a bit. Yeah.
I would assume that especially the finance, like, you know, like Coinbase or something, if they're yeah. doing ads. I bet any money they're pulling back a little bit right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You know, like
for sure.
there's a lot of finance, fintech companies that are going to get hit hard right now.
Yeah.
And so they're probably pulling back. What's the highest? Do you remember your highest CPMs that you've seen? Because
oh.
like that's probably like pretty much as high as it probably gets for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mine have definitely been higher before. Like, let me pull this.
I don't know. But like, and just for context for people listening, some people's CPMs are like, $2, $3, $5. And so like mine are already fairly high because it's a kind of like technology and my demographic is older. I have a big US audience.
I think mine have been as high as like close to 50 on the high end. So
yeah. I've never seen 50, that's for sure.
It depends on like the video topic as well. Cause there's some like sub niches of finance that are even
hit real hard.
Yeah, that can do that too. So it's yeah, it's definitely a very lucrative niche, I think, because it's just like they're, you know, it's talking about money. So there's obviously gonna be a lot of money in there in general. So yeah, I mean I'm lucky to be in
yeah.
it for sure.
Have you for you finance channels, does a recession like this, like I think we're probably in a recession
yeah,
right now.
Yeah,
it pretty pretty
I
much
would,
seems
I would say
like it.
So, yeah.
Does it help or hurt your channel? Are people less enthused about money right now? Or are they like, or is there more curiosity because they're like, what's gonna happen? Tell me, Steve.
Yeah, there's actually some interesting trends I think I'm noticing. I think there's definitely less like exuberance in it. You know, I think like the past year or two was like crazy in
yeah.
financial markets. I think like everyone's
making money.
Yeah, everyone poured in. Everyone got interested in investing, like so much money yeah. in the space. And I think a lot of the kind of like, I guess you could call it like boring traditional wisdom in finance got forgotten for a period of time.
Right.
But now I'm
NFTs are way better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like
forget index funds and bonds.
That's right. Yeah.
Bogle has to rewrite the book and include NFTs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
How much should be in NFTs?
Oh my God, imagine the 20th edition of the book featuring the last chapter
I
on
like
NFTs.
I like to put 20% into NFTs.
Oh my God. Yeah, so like it was interesting navigating that period being like I came from, like you said, like kind of the index fund world. So that's kind of like the slow and steady, not necessarily like safer approach. Like it is the safer approach from like a statistical standpoint,
right.
but you're still heavily investing
safe.
In the stock market.
Yeah.
So that was like, that's been like my main approach for the whole, like my investing. So that's what I tend to talk about the most on my channel. But now I think that now that everybody's lost a bunch of money and all these other things, I think they're
coming back to the wisdom.
Yeah. I think like the super casual people in the space have kind of like moved on and they might be moving on with their lives thinking that like investing is a scam.
It's
like all this stuff
is
the stock market's rigged. It's a scam. You know, I hope those people come back. I hope they come back and like learn more about it. But
that's unfortunate that a lot of people are gonna have
that. They
will
have that conception.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. But I think the people who are sticking around are being like, okay, how do I actually learn about this stuff? Like, what's maybe the right way to go about this? So
I tried stock picking and NFTs.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Yeah. So I think there's going to be a resurgence in like the classic type of like wisdom in investing and just learning about personal finance, like emergency funds and stuff. Like, let's make emergency funds cool. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah. There is a thing called a recession that can happen.
Yeah, yeah. Who knew? The stock market goes up, but it can also go down.
It doesn't just keep going up all of the time.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's interesting. And then kind of back to your question about like, I think it might hurt from, I think like a CPM standpoint, maybe like advertiser standpoint, just because like you said, if you're a brokerage company and you have less users now, you're probably going to scale back on your marketing budget a bit and stuff like that. But I think, you know, it's always like a temporary thing. And then long term, like I think the trajectory is definitely more people getting interested in this stuff because it's more accessible now than ever. And I think more and more people are realizing how powerful it is to learn about money, to change your life in whatever way you want it to.
Yeah.
Like for me, I used it to quit my job and then do YouTube. Like that was all through the power of like managing my money a certain way.
You left that part out, that like the reason also why you were okay
quitting
your job wasn't just because I had a gut feeling I'm going all in on this.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's not your personality. You had saved up and invested. So you had an emergency fund, investment fund.
I was saving over 50% of my income for like
50% is like, if people hear that right now, probably like, wow, you must make an insane amount of money to be able to do 50%.
When I moved to the city, I think I was making $40,000+, and living like by myself. I throughout my entire career, like the cap, I think the highest point I hit was $70,000. Mm-hmm. So I never made like an insane amount of money that allowed me to save it. It was just like, I learned about this like financial independence movement and I wanted that to be a part of my life. So I just became like really disciplined with my money. Like I rode my bike all over the city. But I did things like that I learned were actually like fun. Like it wasn't just that it was saving me money. Like I preferred to do it. I was like,
you realize it was a better lifestyle.
Yeah,
also,
I love biking in the city. Like I love going by all the cars that are parked in traffic and just like waving to them and being like, see you later.
Have fun pumping up that $2 a liter gas.
Yeah, it's insane right now. I mean, I do have a car now.
No, yeah,
but like, I mean, like,
but it's that getting that like ball rolling.
Yeah,
and when you don't have to worry about debt and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like you have way more opportunity, way more freedom to choose what you actually want to do versus what you just have to do to get by.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's totally worth it to sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was starting filmmaking, I had a car that was worth probably like $7,000 or something like that. And then I spent, I think it was like $16,000 on a camera.
Wow.
And like, so I knew, like, I could have bought a newer car, a nicer car, but I knew that the camera was going to do way more for me. Like, I calculate out if I rent it out to the productions, I'm going to pay it back pretty quickly, and I'm going to look more legit in the film, and I'm going to become a better filmmaker because I have this better camera.
Yeah.
I have access to using it every day, kind of thing. I put that into it, you know, like, and I had that opportunity because I was smart with my money and then also just where I was putting the money that I was making, you know, like instead of just buying a fancier and fancier car, which wouldn't have done anything for me. Really.
No, yeah, exactly. I think like especially in the early days of whatever you're doing, like when you're young, the quote unquote, like investing in yourself, I really do think that is the best thing you can do, whether that is like, you know, paying for some type of courses to learn something or investing in a piece of equipment. Like I think the hard idea to wrap your head around is sometimes you have to spend money to make money.
Yeah.
Like that's something that's super true, whether it's
not on a nice car, but
not in that. Why am I not making any money?
I'm spending all of my money on clothes and it's not making
Yeah, no, in a what you would call a productive asset.
Yeah.
That's going to generate you a higher return on it than what you originally paid for it is the idea. So, I mean, yeah, I think there's so many things you can do and so many things you can learn about money that can change it from just that like you know, either like boring thing or that weird thing or that rigged thing or just that thing you didn't learn in school. Like it's a really incredible world for sure.
Now we're in a recession.
Yeah.
It's, we got first quarter is down already. Second quarter is most likely down.
Yeah.
Then
we're
officially in a recession.
And like all the markets are way down.
Yeah. Everything is just, everything is getting shot.
Yeah.
What do you have any advice for people, creators, like, you know, what should we be doing right now? Like, I know this is not a financial advice. Just don't.
Not financial advisor. Almost was, but not.
Hypothetically, if somebody was in our position.
Yeah, I think like, I guess I would say like, I can only speak to, I guess, like my view, which may be wrong, and kind of what like I'm tending to do right now. So I think it's always a good idea to basically like shore up your financial position as much as possible by like essentially like trying to like raise as much cash as possible. So like, you know, I think like if you can, like building something like an emergency fund is great. Like trying to, I know it's hard with the price of, you know, gas and everything going crazy, but if you can kind of take a serious look at your financial position and be like, where have I maybe been living a little bit in excess over the past little while? Like where have I maybe been a little bit extravagant even, you know, and being like, Times are kind of tough right now and they might get worse. And there's no saying for sure when things will turn around and get better. So I think like kind of tightening the belt a bit is a good idea for sure. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of like, you want to put yourself in a position to like, you know, like if it's, let's say that there's a storm outside, like we want to be able to weather the storm and then come out and be strong.
Right.
And not necessarily in a position where we have to rebuild in the future.
Yeah.
Where you like, you've been kind of like almost building behind the scenes throughout the recession and you can come out like really strong, I think is the best possible thing you could do. So yeah, I think just like overall having like kind of a bit of like a tighter belt mentality would be a good idea. But if you are in a position where it's like, you do have kind of like excess cash and stuff. Well, you know, like all the markets and stuff are down. So it might be a good opportunity to look into like making some types of investments in certain areas and things like that. Cause you know, down markets are historically like a prime time to do something like that.
Isn't it like investing? I've only been in net investing a few years now in a more serious kind of way. And it's such a psychological head game.
Oh, yeah.
And you see it on social media so hard. Like everybody's like, buy the dip, buy hold, you know, like, go invest, you know. Now that everything's down, nobody's talking about buying the dip.
No.
Nobody's talking about holding. Nobody's talking about any of those things that were
no true buy the dippers anymore.
Yeah, no going to the moon.
No, the moon lander has crashed. The moon mission has failed.
Like none of that.
Yeah,
it's so funny to see how quickly it just turns, and everybody is so demotivated right now to invest in anything.
Which is like the exact opposite of what you should be. Like I see this all the time because I'm like in the space looking at stuff all the time. Like I last year in I think February I made a video about this particular. This fund, so it's called ARK Invest, and for those of you who don't know who are listening, it was basically just like a very popular fund that was increasing in value a lot. So everyone was very excited about this fund. They wanted to invest in it. It's pretty cool to look back on now because I put out a video called like warning for basically it was like a little bit of a warning about investing.
Just be cautious.
Yeah, just be cautious. Just make sure you know what you're getting yourself into. And I'm pretty sure the like day I put out the video is like a few days from the peak and now it's down like a huge amount. But the comments when I posted that video, everyone was like, oh, how could you, like, this is the best fund ever. Like, I don't agree with this at all, blah, 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 blah. And now like if you look anywhere, whether it's like Reddit or like any comment section anywhere discussing ARK, everyone's like, it's the worst thing ever.
I can't believe anybody ever believed in this.
Yeah, this was the stupidest thing ever. I knew it from the start. I did. And
I've been saying it from.
Yeah, it's like, where were you when it was like at its peak, you know? So people act the exact opposite at like polar ends of the spectrum. It's so funny.
And it's so, you just want to believe, like, you know, there's been so much growth in the last few years. You just want to believe that, like, it's just going to keep going and going. And meanwhile, if you really think about it, you're like,
just do the math.
Yeah, it's like, for sure going to slow down at least, or come most likely come down. Like, it has to come down at some point.
It's like people see a line and then, like, here's the present moment and they're like, okay, so the future will be like that.
Yeah,
too.
It'll be just as high. Same increase.
Just continue the line. Yeah. It's like, it's not how it works.
Yeah, not quite. I mean, over time, maybe, but could be a lot of time. Yeah. a long time.
And like the thing with investing too is the hard part isn't investing your money in like the good times. It's sticking your entire job as a long-term investor is basically just sticking through the bad times.
You don't
have to do anything in the good times because it's easy. It's fine. Yeah, but it's you having that conversation with yourself in the bad times to be like, okay, this is fine. Like it's happened so many times before. Yeah. It will definitely happen again. And I just need to keep doing the exact same thing I've been doing.
Stick with the plan.
Yeah.
This is where I need to stick with the plan. I think one of the hard things is that like COVID really throws a wrench into everything.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to like forecast what's going to happen because you don't know how exactly humans are going to react to all this. And like one of the theories that I have playing in my head is that like now that COVID seems to be basically over, people have been cooped up, and then like I think there's going to be a little this like roaring 20s type YOLO, like, man, like this could be over tomorrow. Like I'm just going to live it up. Yeah. I'm just going to buy that thing. I'm going to go on that trip. Like, who cares about savings? I'm just going to live it up because I don't know what's going to happen when the next pandemic's going to hit. I'm going to be stuck at home the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's not the right time right now for that. Like, that's only going to make things a lot worse for a lot of people. So
yeah. Yeah. No, I could totally see that, especially because like during the pandemic, like in the financial world, there was a lot of stuff that happened in the financial world to create a lot of like easy money opportunities. And I think if that environment even like, because right now you see it in areas like the stock market where everyone's kind of like maybe expecting it to go down. But even at a hint of it going back up, everyone's like, let me back in, put all my money back in. Like everyone is so excited to just get on that next wave and go crazy again. Like there's that exuberance is not dead. It's just like waiting a little bit. So I could see there being like a roaring 20s across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you scared? Are you excited? Are you nervous?
Oh boy.
All
of them.
I feel like there's probably like as a YouTuber, YouTuber, it's probably great to have like content to make videos about, right?
There's no shortage of things to talk about in like the financial world. It's crazy.
It's kind of like in my world when you make a video about like switching to Canon, switching to Sony, like people love that stuff.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And it's like kind of the same thing that you've been making those videos about, like, you know, growth, making money, and now it's like these are like, you know, like now we're switching cameras, you know, now we're switching gears, and there's this whole other side of the coin, videos that now you can dive into.
Exactly. And I think those ones are great too, because like we were kind of talking about earlier, I think how people return back to that stuff, like the, you know, I guess more exciting ones are great like short term, but I think the stuff that stands forever is great for like the long term, because then like I was talking about this stuff in 2019, 2020, 2021 were crazy, but now that it's like 2022 and things are down again, whoever was following from 2019 and kind of learned stuff that was a bit more like boring and traditional about financial things, now might be like, I'm glad I made that emergency fund and stuff. So it's like you're playing the long-term game, I think there, which is good, because that's what we want to do with our money.
If somebody wanted to start a YouTube channel right now, what would you say to them? Do you have any advice for the people, the aspiring people, the people that just started a channel? Any advice that you could provide? Because you're still in the beginnings, not beginning stages, but you're in the earlier stages of your channel, I would say still.
Yeah, because I'm still like figuring out a lot of stuff. I think I would say like kind of everything we've said so far. So definitely make sure it's like pairing that like really strong passion with something that where you're solving a problem, like where you have something you can offer the world to help somebody out in some way, whether that's making them laugh, helping them understand money, anything like that. But I think now more than ever, it seems like there's so many people creating channels, and I don't think that's a bad thing, but I think it's now more important than ever to figure out like what makes you different. And then to really one of my friends, Eric, he says like lean into what makes you different. And I think that that's really true. Like what aspect of yourself differentiates you from other people, and then like really lean into that. That's what I did. So I think that's the best advice I would give.
And I think a lot of people have forget that, like you do want to choose a niche, like and the more people there are on YouTube, the more channels you may. I don't know if this is 100%, but maybe you even go kind of tighter on the niche, and then I always think you should choose like a niche, and then as your channel grows, you can also like open up the areas, the topics of your channel. But it's so interesting to see, like I'm seeing so many different like, kind of like off the grid, tiny home living channels, these like people building cabins in the woods, like long videos, like hour long, and they're doing well. And there's so many different areas of YouTube.
Yeah.
And they just like keep popping up, I feel like.
Yeah.
And so like there is so much opportunity. There are so many, if we want to call them problems, problems that you can solve still.
Yeah.
And so you just got to find the problem that works for you, that you have that solution. And
That unique angle on, like, you can almost kind of, I think, imagine YouTube as like a series of conversations. Like, you know, in the filmmaking circle, there's all these people in there having conversations about filmmaking. And it's like, what would you do if you wanted to walk into that conversation? And like, what's your unique angle or voice you're going to bring to that conversation and be a part of it? Like, I think that's a helpful way to think about it. And I would also add that, I don't know if you've kind of noticed this, but it kind of seems like a lot of what to call them, but like things about social media have felt like a little bit stale now, because they've been going on for so long that they're almost kind of ripe for like some type of new stuff to come in to like shake it up, new formula, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that's you, if you think you have that like that new thing to kind of break the mold, I think now is like a really, really good time to bring that to the table.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the new stuff also ends up coming, they end up changing algorithms. Like right now, we have the short form algorithm has been popping for the last few years. I think that's probably going to die off a little bit. I think that's not as sustainable, or the longevity isn't there. I think it's kind of like the candy that, you know, it's really attractive at first, but then after you're like, maybe I should, you know, like actually think about something more healthy.
Yeah.
And you kind of get over the candy and you go for something better.
Yeah.
I think algorithms are going to change, and that will probably bring completely, completely new types of content, new types of channels. You always see it, whatever channels are the biggest, the most influential, those are the channels that are, that gives you the biggest clues on what the algorithm is doing right now. You know, so right now we've been in like the Mr. Beast algorithm where like you just take any idea to the most big biggest massive level.
Yeah.
And like, you, because click through rate, it's all like, you just got to get people to click on that thumbnail. And if you get them to click, then
what's the craziest thing I can put in front of their faces?
Keep their attention, keep attention, attention, you know? Yeah. Like, and before it was like, you just had to make long videos consistently, and that did well. And that brought the vlogger revolution, you know?
Because like,
it
was watch time.
It was easy to make long videos every single day because you just filmed
your
day, you know? You didn't have to plan out a huge idea and stuff like that. Like, you can't do a Mr. Beast video every single day.
No.
Mr. Beast algorithm, Mr. Beast wouldn't have done as well 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Maybe still would have, I'm sure, done well.
Yeah.
But not as, it wouldn't have hit as well right now, you know, as right now. So yeah, algorithm's going to change. And then, you know, new content, new channels.
Yeah,
will be born, you know.
Yeah, it's gonna be exciting to see like the new crop.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, man. I really appreciate it. I love it. You know, we talked about solving a problem, and I feel like this podcast, my idea was to have people like you. So these are the conversations that we have all the time, but other people don't get to hear them, and like, that's what I wanted this podcast to be, where we can have these conversations and other people can also learn from it, because YouTube is the wild, wild west still. Even though people think it's like, oh, it's too late to start YouTube. Like, this is still so early.
Oh,
like,
my God,
so early. Nobody knows what's going on. Everybody's just trying to figure it out as they're doing it. And so these conversations, I think, help not only me and you, but also they can help a lot of other people.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, for sure. Like this type of thing would have been like invaluable for me when I was starting. So really happy to be on it. And I was going to say, it's a good thing I didn't wear a black hat today, because otherwise we would have been like a mirror image of each other.
We're repping the Enemo shirts. Yeah, you got the boxy tee on. I got the other t-shirt on.
Yeah.
We got stacks of Enemo behind. We actually got some new samples I got to show you. Anyway, okay, we got to end the podcast. I'll show you the new Enemo samples.
Okay, cool.
All right, thanks for coming on. See ya. We'll